Hi, I'm Neil Stavem. I want to thank you for listening to this podcast from Connecting Faith. There are many more podcasts available at our website, myfaithradio.com, and your support makes this possible.
Always expect something good on your lunch hour. Connecting Faith with Life.
Hi, welcome to Connecting Faith. I'm Neil Stavem. So glad to have you tuned in. Happy Monday. We're going to talk a little bit about higher education today. Ted Ross at the controls. Ted, We broadcast from the University of Northwestern, the Mel Johnson Media Center, and I've noticed over the last few weeks more and more families coming with students, just doing college visits, checking things out.
High school seniors coming looking at things.
It's that time of year. You're getting lots of invitations and opportunities, trying to decide where you're going to take care of some higher education responsibilities. Hopefully today's conversation will help us because we're going to talk about getting a degree without going broke, which is a pretty big issue.
Yeah, so, it is. A lot of people even don't think about that, and suddenly they get out of college, a lot of debt.
Well, we're going to address it in the moments ahead. Also want to just say I'd love to get your perspective later on in the show. We're going to open up the phone lines and find out from you what was the best advice you received regarding your education, or maybe what would you do differently regarding your education. And we'll talk about those questions coming up here in the second half of the show. But in the meantime, I want to get started with today's guest.
I'm looking forward to this. I'll be taking notes.
Well, Alex Chediak is with us today. We're going to talk about his new book called Beating the College Debt Trap, Get a Degree Without Going Broke. Alex earned a bachelor's degree at Alfred University in ceramic engineering and a master's and a Ph.D. in material science and engineering from University of California, Berkeley. And he worked as an engineer for a number of years, and he spent some time teaching at now Bethlehem College and Seminary, got his start at the University of Northwestern, and we're honored to have him sort of as one of us. And he's been a professor of engineering and physics at California Baptist University for a number of years. Written several books, and we've talked with him in the past, but this one is timely and helpful, and I know it's going to be encouraging to many of our listeners today. So, Alex, welcome. First of all, good to have you back with us on Connecting Faith.
Thanks for having me, Neil.
So I want to talk about beating the college debt trap, getting a degree without going broke. And it just seems like an endless spiral. It's escalating college costs. They're just going up and up. And then they end up, really marketing to maybe more students that can't afford to go. And then the student loan debt gets out of sight. So how do we get into this cycle?
You know, college has gotten more expensive because it's more in demand, supply and demand, basically. In the last 30 years, there's been an 80% increase in enrollment. And during that time, the percentage of high school graduates that pursue college has increased from about 50% to about 70%. So when lots of people want something, it tends to cost more. Then you've got buildings and staff, expanding infrastructure to accommodate more students, internet access, infrastructure regarding wireless internet is very expensive, and security that goes with it. Administrative burdens are added. The government has increased burdens in terms of data collection and that sort of thing. Then you've got amenities. More and more of how colleges compete for students is by not having just good academics, but by having an overall experience to offer to sell to students. So the recreation centers, the cafeterias, student centers, different kinds of nice things that students want are also pricey. So on the one hand, we complain about the price, but yet the market studies show that this is what students are demanding. So it's kind of a catch-22, so to speak.
But there is, a serious problem with student loan debt, right? I mean, that is more than credit card debt now, isn't it?
Oh, yeah. It's over $1.2 trillion last I saw, overall student debt. And it's not only young people, it's older people, people in their 30s that still haven't paid it off. So, yeah, it is getting out of hand. And the message I'm trying to bring in being the college debt trap is, as a student, as a parent, understanding the system as you get into it will help you make wiser choices. You know, a lot of schools do have generous financial aid policies. A lot of schools are willing to give out several thousand dollars a year in discounts to students if they meet the right criteria for that college. So it's figuring out what colleges are going to be most generous to students like me, and then how can I leverage that to minimize my debt? Also, how can I understand my earning prospects when I graduate so that I'm not borrowing too much while I'm in school? If you borrow a minimal amount while you're in school, college can be a great launching pad into a career, because more than ever now, education is becoming required in the job market.
Well, maybe we should just start kind of at, I guess, going back a bit. Does everyone need to go to college? Let's talk about that first.
I think everyone now needs to have some kind of way to distinguish themselves in the market. It doesn't have to be a four-year college. It could be an associate's program, trade school, military, some place where you got training that resulted in some kind of certification that is recognized by some industry. Let's put it that way. And especially for the associate's level, healthcare and technology, dental hygienists make good money. Computer programmers, computer technicians make good money. Mechanics actually make pretty good money in the long term as they get better and better at their craft. So I think some people who aren't necessarily wired to be in a classroom for 4 or 5 years after high school but are good working with their hands or who are good working with people can pursue business lines of work, real estate, for example, the real estate industry. Some people have bachelor's degrees, but you don't actually have to have a bachelor's degree. You just have to pass a certification. And then understand the market and be able to sell and buy houses in that market. So I think there are industries and fields that are promising financially that don't require the four-year certificate, but a two-year certificate usually is an entry point. So I think everyone needs some way to distinguish themselves. Being able to graduate high school and looking for a job is not going to do very well for most people.
Well, you mentioned, you know, 4 or 5 years, but I think you mentioned in the book that, you know, 5, maybe even 6 years is not all that uncommon anymore, is it, to get a degree?
No. Now, the six-year graduation rate is something that the government asks all colleges to track, and nationwide it's only about 55% that actually begin their freshman year, graduate in 6 years. So, yeah, I think 5 year is becoming more of the common thing, and then sometimes 6 years. And a lot of that is people switching majors or people dropping out for a while to earn money. And so one of the things I talk about in the book is really knowing who you are before you go to college. I think that the days of our grandparents went to college and they kind of figured out who they were while they were going. They made enough money in the summer to pay off all their tuition for the year. And they ended up being able to kind of discover – it was more about self-discovery. You could take a bunch of classes, figure out what you liked, and no matter what, you'd graduate without any debt because the tuition was so low. You were able to make enough money in the summer to pay off all of it. And those days are over. Now, you can't really earn enough money to pay all of tuition, even at a state school. You're going to have to rely on some kind of financial aid, whether it's scholarships or loans, one or the other, to get by. And so knowing who you are when you start college is more important. You can't afford to spend extra time discovering who you are there. I mean, it's fun. It's great. But it is very expensive. So what can you do in high school? I talk about getting experiences that are academic even before you go to college. It could be unpaid internships. It could be clubs or athletic programs that you're involved in during the summer. So that when you begin your major as a freshman, you already kind of have a sense of what the career prospects are in that major, as well as your suitability for that major, as opposed to going into something and then figuring out whether you're successful at it. Having some idea at the beginning that, you know what, I am good at math, I am good at science. I know that because I was part of several clubs in high school, and my professors found me to be quite promising in these areas. So I'm going to pursue engineering and know that I have a good chance of making it because I did well in high school in these areas.
You know, and come to choosing a major, is it all about the money we'll make at the end of our education, or should there be some higher value?
Definitely higher value. I think money should be a factor that you consider in how much you borrow, but it shouldn't be the defining factor of what you pursue. You should pursue something that's at the intersection of what you're good at and what you enjoy, because you have to really enjoy it to get better at it over time. And it's important to kind of know both those things, what you're good at and what you enjoy. Sometimes students have unrealistic perceptions of their abilities in certain fields. They believe themselves to be really good at, say, math or science or writing or whatnot, and they think they're going to be great at it, and they've never really had a lot of opportunities to be assessed by those who are farther down the road of life. So the whole everyone's above average kind of mentality kicks in, and then people start college and realize, well, I'm actually not that good at music, or I'm not that good at art. I thought I was great at it, but I'm really not that good at it. And then, well, what's my backup? So I think having a realistic expectation, I think Romans 12 says we also have a sober judgment. We also have analyze ourselves with sober judgment. I think it's Romans 12:3. In other words, have a realistic judgment of who we are and what our gifts are, and not be overestimating our abilities, and then allowing others to speak into our life as to what we're good at and what we're successful at, listening to the data, not just to our hearts, but listening to the external data from other people and other experiences that we've had. Objective accomplishments speak highly to what we're good at. And so then having some sense of, if I go on this career track, it's going to require me to have certain skills to be successful. And if I'm not found to be successful, I need to be able to switch majors and pursue something else. Medical school is like that, for example. 9 out of 10 freshmen who want to go to medical school will never get to medical school. So they have to begin that freshman year with other options on the table, and plan B and plan C and plan D.
And I suppose it's there's maybe the other side. There's a risk of becoming maybe over-specialized. Say, well, I love tech stuff, so I'm going to pursue IT. That's all I'll do.
Right, exactly. No, I think the tech majors, the so-called applied majors, are becoming more popular now. For good reason. The job market's very healthy in those fields. Healthcare, technology, engineering, what they call STEM, science, technology, engineering, and math, good job prospects, good earning prospects. But, yeah, students who go into these fields, they need to be careful to not over-specialize, because the reality is you got to prepare for not just that first job, but for the fourth or fifth or sixth job. You know, I was talking to someone just this weekend who's 26 years old, in his third job already out of college. That's becoming increasingly common. Just the way the job market is, you got to think not just about your first job, but about your whole career. And liberal arts education is important for everybody, especially even those still going into technical areas, because they teach you how to communicate well, how to address problems, how to think critically without all the information. So not just being a numbers person or a computer programmer, it's very important to be broad and well-rounded, and to be able. That's going to help you interview well. It's going to help you work well with people in the job market, with a diverse community, and to be able to be flexible throughout your career that will probably span multiple jobs.
Getting wise advice today from Alex Chediak. Alex is an author, speaker, and professor at California Baptist University. He's authored several great books, including Thriving at College and Preparing Your Teens for College, has a passion for helping students and their parents embrace all that comes with responsible adulthood. And the new one is certainly that. It's called Beating the College Debt Trap, Getting a Degree Without Going Broke. We've got 4 copies to give away, and so we're going to invite you to call in and sign up for that. We'll do a drawing at the end of the hour. It's 877-93-FAITH, 877-933-2484. More with Alex Chediak talking about beating the college debt trap in a moment here on Connecting Faith. You're listening to Connecting Faith, and we've connected with Alex Chediak today. I always appreciate Alex, who serves as a professor at California Baptist University. He has been a professor at the University of Northwestern, you know, back in the in his early days of higher education. He's written a great deal about helping us really thrive at college. In fact, that was one of his best-selling books, Thriving at College. He's also written Preparing Your Teens for College, and we're talking today about his new book. It's called Beating the College Debt Trap, Getting a Degree Without Going Broke. And Alex, I guess we should say, isn't investing in education one of those areas where it's worth going into debt for?
To some extent. I think college is worth it for the right kinds of students at the right price points. In other words, if you're going to go to a 4-year college, much more expensive than an associate's program, you got to think about the overall debt that you're getting into relative to your earning prospects. In other words, there are students who graduate with $90,000 in debt, and they're pursuing careers that are not going to be high paying. Again, I don't think everyone should pursue a high paying job. That's not the point. The point is you don't want to have debilitating debt that's going to limit you from living out the plans that God has for your life. So if you want to pursue something that's lower paying, maybe a ministry job, maybe a missionary type job, you want to watch your overall debt load. Right now, I've learned of missions agencies that are limiting those they take into their programs because students that come out of college with too much debt are not able to pay that off on the mission field. So debt can really limit your flexibility and your opportunities after you graduate. You want to minimize debt to maximize freedom. That being said, if you're going to pursue something that's higher paying And the only way you can do it is by borrowing $20,000, and you're going to be a computer programmer. You're probably not going to have too much of a problem paying off that $20,000. So it's a matter of perspective and keeping the debt load at a reasonable figure relative to your realistic earning prospects.
And, of course, I guess one of the challenges is that student loans are pretty easy to obtain, right? And that, oftentimes we don't actually look at the fine print or have any idea how much we're going to have to pay back as we keep sort of piling on these loans.
Yeah, one of the things I talk about in Beating the College Debt Trap is how to kind of predict your future monthly payment. And that's very important because the majority of students I talk to that are seniors that are graduating, they still don't know what they're going to be paying when they graduate. And that's a number that they could be calculating as they go. A rough way of estimating it is it's about, you divide by 100, and that's your monthly payment, roughly. So $15,000 of debt when you graduate, roughly $150 a month for 10 years. And then you want to kind of estimate your earning prospects, take off about a third for taxes, tithing, all that sort of thing, and then divide it by 12, get an idea of what's your monthly take-home pay going to be, and then how onerous is that monthly payment going to be on your take-home salary. And doing that calculation earlier, before you start signing up for lots of loans, is a good way to do it. So even setting a limit your freshman year for your total debt before you graduate, and then realizing that if you borrow $10,000 that first year, how much are you going to be borrowing that second year, that third year, that fourth year? And at some point, it's going to put you over the edge. So also I talk about different kinds of debt, different kinds of loan products. So some loans are fixed interest rate and are government loans, and they have some forgiveness protections in terms of if you go into certain lines of work, if you go into public service, the government will forgive your public loans in 10 years. Well, the private loans don't work that way. So when you take out private loans, they're usually variable interest rate. They usually require your parents to co-sign with you, which involves all kinds of risk for them. And they don't have any forgiveness protections in terms of certain kinds of work you might go into. So the federal loans are better than the private loans, although even there, you want to watch your overall debt load to make sure that it's within reason. The ballpark that I recommend in the book is to keep it below about half of your future earning prospect, your future salary. So let's say you're going into a line of work that the starting salary should be around $50,000. You'd want to keep that overall debt load below $25,000 would be a safe figure. And that's within the limit of the federal student debt that you're allowed to have. The other thing I recommend is really maximizing subsidized loans are much better than unsubsidized loans, because subsidized loans, the government's paying the interest for you while you're in school, so it's basically an interest-free loan while you're a student. And if you're, depending on your socioeconomic background, you can get, I believe, something like $15,000 to $18,000 over 4 or 5 years in subsidized student loans. If that can get you all the way through, which for many students it can, if you're smart about it, if you're nimble about your expenses, then you can graduate and have no interest. Basically, start paying the interest when you graduate, and all through college, you didn't have any interest payments at all to make.
In fact, one of the things you talk about is that you don't recommend students take any loans out during the first year of college, and obviously there's some things that we can do to kind of come into those maybe a higher expense school already having some college classes, right?
Yeah. If you can get your first year worth of credits through advanced placement, international baccalaureate, community college, some states like Minnesota, for example, I don't remember the details, but I believe if you're in 16 years old, you can start going to community college for free for a couple of years. Yeah. So like while you're in high school, you could be earning college credits at a community college and really finish high school with sophomore status. What that does is it limits your time at a four-year college to 3 years, which is a 25% reduction in your overall expense for college. So, yeah, if you can keep that first year debt-free through some creative approach, that's going to help you a lot. Or at the most, I've seen some students who come from lower-income backgrounds who have been able to keep it down to just that subsidized federal loan, which is $3,500 is how much you could borrow interest-free from the government if you are deemed to qualify for it based on need. I know someone right now who comes from a lower income background going to a Christian school, and the Christian school's total cost of attendance is over $40,000 a year. Now, that school is only requiring her to pay, earn, or borrow about $17,000, and she was able to only borrow $3,500. So she's working a job on campus, a job off campus. Her parents are paying some things. She's paying some things. Her uncle and aunt's paying some things. And together, they're only having to borrow $3,500 a year. So in 4 years, that's going to come out to $13,000, $14,000. That's going to be very reasonable for her in her major to be able to be successful and not be trapped by the debt. So I think it's just a matter of being wise and lowering that debt, especially in the first year, because you don't know. You might change majors early in college. You might take 5 years to graduate. Why borrow a lot at the front end? Save your borrowing for the latter part when graduation is more when the finish line is more apparent, as we say. The graduation date is more clear and firm, and you know what your major is, and you know that you're successful in your major, and maybe you've had an internship, so that you have a sense of, okay, I'm going to be out in 2 years and be able to earn money in this discipline. Save your borrowing for that part of your college.
You mentioned maybe family, friends. I mean, there's something useful probably about connecting with family and maybe just even family loans, right?
Right, yeah. Family loans are better than any other kind of loan because usually they're interest-free, and your parents are easier to work with in the federal government in terms of paying back your debt. So, definitely, your parents can get, I believe it's up to $4,000 of income tax reduction based on spending for college. Then your uncles, aunts, grandparents are a great place to go for interest-free loans. So really coming up with that dollar figure that your college expects you, that net price is what's important to know. So colleges have a total cost of attendance, and then they have a net price. The net price is what you have to pay, earn, or borrow. And when I say earn, I mean work-study hours or off-campus job. So pay, earn, or borrow, the net price. So if a college costs $40,000 total cost of attendance, but the net price is $17,000, that's a great deal because basically they're subsidizing your education at a rate of something like 55%. So that's what you want to look at, is schools that can be generous for you, can subsidize, can scholarship a lot of your attendance. That's going to be very helpful.
And I guess we should just say that a financial aid office isn't necessarily looking out for our best interests, right? I mean, they have their set of priorities as well.
Well, yeah. So the financial aid office is not a financial advisor. That's kind of how I say it. It's kind of like if you were to buy a house, you wouldn't expect your realtor to tell you what your price range should be, right? Your realtor normally would say, okay, what can you afford? And you would give your realtor a figure, and they would look for houses in that range. I think college should be similar. You with your parents should decide what you can afford, and then the financial aid office will help you do the best you can with that price range. But don't ask them to do your job for you in terms of decide what's enough, what's too much debt to have. That's your call to make based on your own comfort level, as well as I think objective metrics of what can you actually earn when you graduate.
Talking today with Alex Chediak, and we're going to come back for another segment to get more on his great new book called Beating the College Debt Trap, Getting a Degree Without Going Broke. We've got some copies to give away, and you can give us a call to sign up for that. 877-93-FAITH is the phone number. Alex Chediak is author, speaker, and professor at California Baptist University. He's written several great books on related topics, Thriving at College and Preparing Your Teen for College, a couple of his great works, and we're going to hear more in just a moment here on Connecting Faith. Alex Chediak is with us today on Connecting Faith. Alex spent a little bit of time teaching at the University of Northwestern, so we claim him as one of ours. He's a professor of engineering and physics at California Baptist University, and he has written several great books. The one we're referencing today is called Beating the College Debt Trap, Getting a Degree Without Going Broke, and we've been giving a few practical ideas. I do want to get your opinion, though. You reference Malcolm Gladwell, who wrote about going to the best schools isn't always the best idea. Somehow we think, well, if it's a more expensive school, you know, it's got the name to it, that really is what we need to pursue. And, you know, that it's so competitive now, we have to get into the best. So what's your thoughts on that?
Yeah, so a lot of people go into debt for prestige. They overestimate the importance of that alma mater's name to future employers. In reality, paying for college is like flying on an airplane. In other words, you might spend $200 for the same flight that I spent $400 on. And the question is, did we get a different product? We got the same product, really. We both got to our destination, you know. And so what you want to do is think about value. Think about what you get and what you pay for. When you go to a big-name school and maybe you're a small fish in a big pond, it's easy to get lost in the crowd. It's easy to get to lose confidence by being kind of in a big pack of people. And if the students are more higher caliber than you are, then you are going to have all the disadvantages that come with being one of the less well prepared, less successful academically students there. On the other hand, when you are one of the better students in a school. So I think Glad will talk about being in the top third, and I think that's really important. If you're in the top third of an incoming college class, meaning you're among the top 30% or so of academically prepared students for college, that's going to bring a lot of advantages to you. First of all, colleges tend to dole out a greater amount of scholarship money to students who are expected to be among their best students coming in. That they allocate more money to those students. Those students get more attention from faculty in terms of letters of recommendation, job leads, and that sort of thing. And there's data that says that you're more likely to graduate in the more challenging fields, such as the STEM fields, so science, technology, engineering, and math. There's actually good data that says the majority of people who graduate and graduate on time in those disciplines are those who come into a particular college in the top third, regardless of what that college is. So even at Harvard, if you go to Harvard and you're one of the least prepared students at Harvard, your chances of actually graduating in a science, technology, engineering, or mathematical field are lower than if you were at a different school where you were one of the higher caliber students. So he calls it the big fish in a small pond advantages. When you're one of the big fish in a small pond, you actually have a confidence boost, and that actually ends up resulting in higher performance over time. You get more attention, you end up doing better, you feel more confident, so you work harder, so you stay in your major, so you graduate on time, and you end up doing just as well in life. There's been data that's been assessed in terms of if you could have gone to a great school, but you went to a less prestigious school, 10 years out, are you any worse off in life financially, happiness-wise, overall success with your career, happy with your life? The answer is no. So it's really important, I think, to go to a college that's a good fit for you, and not just don't view the college admissions process as a game to be won, but as a match to be made. You're trying to make a good match for you and not just trying to win some contest by getting into some elite school. And certainly not worth borrowing a fortune just to say you went to that school.
Yeah. Well, say a word about what the employers are really looking for in a college grad today. Maybe has that changed, and should that influence the kind of higher education we're pursuing?
I think employers are looking for well-rounded students. So it's not so much the top GPA. Like I have students who will panic about a B+ or an A-. And I tell them, really, either one will be just fine for you. What's going to help you is your overall resume, what you bring. What skill set do you bring to that employer? What value can you add to that industry? So it's not just your GPA, but it's your extracurricular experiences. You know, a lot of students have extracurricular experiences, but they're not always academic extracurricular experiences. So can you be a teaching assistant? Can you be a tutor? Can you be a research assistant for a professor? Getting an internship? The things that you do that help you develop communication skills, skills of working with people, skills of applying what you learn in the classroom in the real world, those are going to make a big difference to future employers.
As you look back, are there some things that you would have done differently in your higher education track? And maybe out of that, is there a most common regret or advice for, you know, people that, you know, have found themselves maybe in debt?
Yeah, I think one of my feelings as an undergraduate student was overvaluing the GPA. I think I fell into the same trap that a lot of my students now fall into, is that you overanalyze how important that number is. And really, it's just a matter of if you're above a 3.0, if you're above a 3.3, you're in a group of students that shows that you can do well academically. And what's going to matter to employers is your own personal path. In other words, if you worked your way through college, and you have a little lower GPA than if you had had all the time in the world to study for your classes, that's going to mean more to an employer because it says something about your character, something about your work ethic, something about your discipline, your perseverance. So I think students who work hard and keep their debt load low and maybe don't do as super well in their classes, their GPA is 3.3 and not 3.7, the reality is over time, that's going to speak volumes to employers in terms of your character, your perseverance, and your responsibility, your sense of being on top of what's in front of you. So that would be my advice to students, is to focus on their overall package.
Sure. Can we still do what we love and get paid for it? I mean, maybe just paint a vision of you know what it could be like. Why pursuing higher education is so valuable, and if we can do it without being saddled by debt, what a difference that will make.
Yeah, I think higher education is still worthwhile if you are smart about how you do it. So going to a college that is valuable, that has a great education at the right price. In other words, when you're on the campus visiting the campus, look around at where the money's going. Is the money going to academics? Is the money going to amenities? If the cafeteria and the student center are the best things on campus and the academic buildings are dilapidated, that tells us something about the college's priorities. So prioritize a school that has good value academically, and then keep your debt load low and do what you love. Because when you do what you love, you're going to do it well. You're going to get better at it over time. And really what matters in college is learning how to learn, learning how to think, learning how to approach problems, learning how to work with people. 10 years from now, you're going to have forgotten a lot of the particulars of what you learned in certain classes. But what you hopefully will have learned is the skill of learning, the mental habits that come with learning to read, learning to think, learning to write, learning to communicate, learning to make presentations, and that you're going to take with you into any industry you go in. And if you keep your debt load low, you're not going to find it onerous when you graduate, and you're going to be able to land employment that you couldn't have otherwise landed, and you're going to be happy with your choices. The people that are regretful are the ones who made careless decisions regarding how they took on debt while they were in school.
Well, as you address it so practically in this book, Beating the College Debt Trap, Getting a Degree Without Going Broke, I mean, it seems like it's sort of a multi-front approach because you also talk about, you know, once you get out of school, I mean, this is about setting up some good budgeting habits, right? And the fact is that we need to be responsible for our own expenses.
Yeah, exactly. No, the book has the last section of the book is all about post-graduation the choices that you make. So the aim of the book is to help college students make informed decisions about how to pay less for college, earn more during college, and set them up for success after college. So after college, a lot of students are being underemployed initially. So that's when you take a job that job itself didn't require a college degree, but you had to take it anyway because it was the best thing that you could find. At that point, it's important not to panic. Not all underemployment is equally bad. What you want to do is take on a job that'll help you develop identity capital in the sense of you want to work in a kind of job that you can put on your resume and that a job that can lead to a better job later on. So, for example, being an unpaid intern at a large firm where that large firm hires a lot of those interns into full-time paid employment, that unpaid internship is better than a job at Starbucks because the Starbucks job doesn't make sense in your resume. Let's say you're a business student and you graduated in business and you haven't got an internship yet, and your options are an unpaid internship with a large business company or paid employment at Starbucks. The unpaid employment is actually a better way to go because it's going to give you identity capital. It's going to be able to go on your resume and speak to your long-term interests, show that you are someone who's going in a certain direction in terms of your career. Now, maybe you get a side job to make some money. That's fine, too. In other words, if you can work 60 hours a week because you're young, you're single, that's great. Then make some money on the side, but do something that you can go on your resume that kind of makes sense in terms of your personal career path, and that's going to put you in a good position. You want to take a job that can help you network and learn about the industry so that you can be in the right place to be able to be promoted into higher lines of work. So underemployment, if you have to be underemployed, take an underemployed job that actually makes sense.
Well, I know you're teaching at California Baptist University. You've taught at the University of Northwestern. You know there's some value in really grounding ourselves in a biblical worldview to help us frame all this. And just say a word about, you know, how God wants us to, you know, engage our minds, I guess, in this process, and that there is value of learning all that we can from a biblical worldview.
Right. And so I think college is about learning how God wired us so that we could serve Him more effectively in our life. We want to love our neighbor as ourselves through our lives, and that includes our work. So our work is what we spend a lot of our waking hours doing. And so we want to be thinking about how can our work demonstrate love for neighbor? And that's going to require figuring out what we're good at and figuring out what we can best do to serve others. So understanding a sense of calling, developing a sense that God is calling us through the totality of our lives, not just to worship Him on Sunday morning, but to honor Him Monday through Friday, to bring all of ourselves to God as an act of spiritual worship, and then seeing our work as a chance to glorify God in the world by doing good things for other people, and really wanting to use that college as a time to train our minds and develop ourselves in order to be more effective at doing that. I think that's so important.
Well, the book is full of great practical advice, encouragement, not only for students, but for parents as well. It's called Beating the College Debt Trap, Getting a Degree Without Going Broke. And it's new from Zondervan, written by Alex Chediak. Alex, author, speaker, professor at California Baptist University, has written several best-selling works, including Thriving at College and Preparing Your Teens for College. And Alex, we're just honored to be able to spend a little time with you again today. Thanks for this good work and the encouragement you've given to a lot of us today.
Thanks for having me, Neil.
I always enjoy the opportunity to chat with Alex Chediak. I hope you enjoyed the conversation. Now, Alex had to take off for actually doing some finals today. But we've got some time coming up here right after this break to hear from you. And here are the questions. By the way, we do have 4 copies of Alex's latest book to give away. So when you call, make sure to sign up for that. Beating the College Debt Trap, Getting a Degree Without Going Broke. Be great insight and advice for a college student in your home or someone that you know and care about. Or maybe you're considering going back to school as well as a working adult. It'll help you there as well. So sign up for that, 877-933-2484. But here's what I'd really like for you to join in when you call. I'd like to hear your answers to these questions. What was the best advice you received regarding your education? Was it, just like to hear from you. You let us know your best advice you received regarding education. Or maybe there was someone who influenced you the most regarding education. Or what would you do differently regarding your education? And we always hear from people kind of looking back and say, I wish I would have. Love to hear your story. Coming up here in the next few minutes. And we'll take your calls, and we got a special giveaway for those who join in with us here on air as well. So here's the phone number, 877-933-2484. That's 877-93-FAITH. Want to hear from you. What was the best advice you received regarding your education? More coming up on Connecting Faith. Today, had a great conversation with Alex Chediak the past few minutes. He had to leave to go take care of a few students, apparently. I guess as a professor, you have to do that. You know? College would be a great place if it wasn't for all the students, right?
Yeah.
Given some finals today, and so he had to bail out a little bit early, but gives us an opportunity to talk with you, and here's our question for you today. I want to find out what was the best advice you received regarding your education, or maybe what you'd do differently regarding your education. So we're just going to take your calls here for the next 12, 15 minutes or so. Let's go to line 6. We've got Esther checking in, listening to Faith 1270. Hey, Esther, thanks for calling.
Hello. The one thing that I think of right away was that my father said, I want you to get acquainted with every one of your instructors. They are your employer at this moment. Find out what they want, what their background is, why they are teaching, and if you relate to them as they have what you need. Everyone will be different, but you will relate. And I found that the most helpful thing. And also because I paid attention to lots of little details, I was able to pick up a lot of little fringy jobs I wouldn't otherwise have gotten, like walking instructor's dogs, peeling eggs for a church dinner. But I was able to graduate without any major debt at all.
Good for you, Esther. Congratulations. Thanks for that good word. We're just looking. We're going to put you back on hold. So we've got going to do a little drawing here at the end of the hour. I've got a couple of copies of Charles Stanley's Handbook for Christian Living. It's Biblical Answers to Life's Tough Questions, and it's like a 500-page book with, of course, it's kind of an all-in-one theology book.
It's like a college textbook right there.
Yes, but it's actually, you know, it's readable. Okay. Charles Stanley has written, you know, and there's no test at the end. But something that you would enjoy and maybe you can give to a college graduate that you know. So, Esther, we'll just put you on hold and we'll get your information in a minute. Let's go to Lisa. She's calling in Madison, listening to Faith 1190. Hey, Lisa, what's the best advice you received?
Got some advice to talk to somebody that was doing the exact kind of work that I eventually wanted to do, which was Christian counseling. And so I did that. And this person educated me on what kind of degrees I could get, why I would choose one over the other. And so that really guided me, I think, away from a lot of mistakes and dead ends.
You're able to maybe focus a little bit quicker then, as opposed to spending a couple of years trying to decide which classes to take, huh?
Yeah, and within my field, it really does matter. There's limitations on certain degrees that there aren't on others.
Sure.
So it's a big deal. Yeah, it was very helpful.
Good. Well, thank you for that call. I appreciate that. And just getting some great insight today. Asking the question, you know, what would you do differently regarding your education, or what was the best advice you received regarding your education? And maybe there's someone, you know, who influenced you the most as well. We'll take your calls. It's 877-93-FAITH, by the way, 877-933-2484. And we'll put you on hold after put you on the air, and you can give Carissa your contact information, and we'll do a little drawing for Charles Stanley's Handbook for Christian Living. Just for your call today, joining us on Connecting Faith. Ted, let's take Jerry in Sausalito City. Jerry, hi, you're on Connecting Faith. What's your advice?
Hey, Neil. Yeah, I think the best advice I ever got, there's an old adage that says, if you don't like kids, you shouldn't be in the nursery. And it means that a lot of times when we volunteer our time and so on, we're put in these spots that really we're not gifted or have a real good skill set for. So I think the best advice I ever got is find out what you don't want to do. And I grew up on a dairy farm, and I didn't mind it that bad, but I knew for the next 40 years of my life, I probably didn't want to get up at 4 o'clock in the morning and milk cows when it's 20 below zero in Minnesota. So find out what you don't want to do, first of all, and then take your gifts, your God-given talents, and your passion, something you're very good at, and go that direction.
Yeah. So do you still not like kids, or was that just a saying for you?
No, I'm just kidding.
Okay. All right. Just checking. I thought we should, you know, maybe we should have a little counseling session or something, Jerry. So, no, that's a good word. So did you get a degree in something that you turned out that you really wanted to do and enjoy doing?
Yeah, ultimately, I knew I wanted to be my own boss. And after so long of working in a corporation, the business degree that I got was well-rounded in marketing and industrial relations and management, pretty well rounded, so you can kind of go anywhere with that degree, and it's worked out well.
Good. Jerry, thanks for the call. Great to have you listening. We'll put you on hold, and the Carissa can get your contact information for sign up for the Handbook for Christian Living. This is something we're giving away here at the end of this hour just for your call today. We're looking for the answer to the question on what was the best advice you received regarding your education. We spent the first 45 minutes or so talking with Alex Chediak of Beating the College Debt Trap, Getting a Degree Without Going Broke. But he had to go give some students some final exams. Mm-hmm. So we just want to open up the phone lines and hear from you. And we've got lines open right now at 877-933-2484. 877-933-2484, 877-93-FAITH. Looking forward to hearing from you.
You know, speaking of college and the debt conversation you just had with Alex, I received some advice when we had our first child from, I was doing a play at the time, and the director, I remember he looked at me and he pointed at me and he said, start the college fund now.
Mm.
And he was serious, you know, and we did. But that's something where I think when you're a new parent, you don't necessarily dive into that because you're just enjoying being a parent and everything. So, yeah. If you're a new parent or know somebody who's about to have their first child, offer that advice to them, too. Start the college fund right now.
Or maybe, you know, parents or grandparents, you can make some contributions to that fund as well.
Yes.
You know, it's hard to know what do our kids really need and grandkids need for toys anymore. So maybe a little help with the college funds. All right. Taking your calls at 877-93-FAITH. We got Sue checking in on line one. Sue, hi. Welcome to Connecting Faith. What's your advice?
Hi. My advice is, well, I was advised to go to a two-year tech school, and I loved it. I am a technical person, and I didn't have to go to school for 4 years and got a good job right after.
Good. And something that you've stayed with, or have you moved into a different career since then?
Nope. I stayed in it. I became a toolmaker. So I went to the school. I first visited the counselor, and I was thinking I'd go into computers because it was during that time when they were big.
Sure.
And he was looking. They were really advertising for women in non-traditional jobs. And I thought, yeah, that sounds good. I'm pretty mechanical. And so I signed up for their toolmaking class and went to my two-year schooling and got a great job and love it.
Good. Well, we're going to put you on hold, and I want to make sure I get your address and contact information because I'm not particularly mechanical, so I'd like to be able to just, you know, call you most any time.
I've been called a tool, but that's a different story.
A whole different story. It reminded me of, as I was talking today with Alex about the beating the college debt trap, and we're talking about, you know, does everybody need to go to college? And as Alex said, you know, so we all need to do something to distinguish ourselves and give us some earning prospects, but... someone has said there's a knowledge of the Bible without a college education is much more valuable than a college education without knowledge of the Bible. So, you know, it doesn't always have to be a 4 or 5 year degree. Let's take Rob from Brandon, South Dakota. Hey, Rob, thanks for calling in. What's your advice?
Hi, Neil. My advice is do what you love, okay?
Mm-hmm.
But then at the same time, figure out how to turn it into a mission field.
Hard to argue with that, because we are all missionaries, right? We're all called to be living the life of faith, and so good words. So, and have you been able to do that in your career work?
Yeah, yes, I get to talk to people like 20 minutes at a time every day, and you know, God comes up every once in a while.
Yeah, good. Hey, thanks for the call, Rob. Good word. Thanks for listening to Faith 1270. And we'll put you back on hold. You can get your contact information. We'll give away a copy of Charles Stanley's Handbook for Christian Living, Biblical Answers to Life's Tough Questions. You know, what we really need is to learn those answers. And as Rob said, you know, do what you love, but then find out a way to make it a mission field. So.
That's right. Yep. God gives us each interests and desires and skills and talents and puts them to work for the kingdom. That's right.
Yeah. Jerry's advice, find out where you don't what you don't want to do.
Yeah.
that's not a bad idea either. So I just think about that old poem that Muhammad Ali had said, stay in college, get the knowledge, stay there till you're through. If they can make penicillin out of moldy bread, they can make something out of you. So anyway,
I encourage
you with that. Thanks for calling today. Thanks for listening in to Connecting Faith. We've got a great week ahead, some wonderful programs. You're going to want to be a part of it. Tomorrow, we're going to focus on mentorship, which is somewhat related. But Summit Ministries President Dr. Jeff Myers is going to talk to us about culture, about faith training, and passing the baton on to the next generation. You want to be a part of that, so join us for Connecting Faith. If you missed part of today's show or want to pass it on to a friend, you can always find the interviews posted online at myfaithradio.com, and then just click on the Connecting Faith show page. That's myfaithradio.com. Click on Connecting Faith, and you can listen to Alex Chediak's the interview with Alex about beating the college debt trap. Appreciate your listening, and we'll join you again tomorrow.